You're listening to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello, welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB. The British Embassy in Washington recently undertook a four-day agricultural trade mission here in the UK, bringing a delegation of US officials from key states to see UK food and farming in all its glory when visiting a range of food producers. I'm John Bates, and I tagged along for part of the programme when the delegation visited two livestock farms in Gloucestershire, and I got to ask our American friends some questions. Before hearing from them, AHDB's Phil Hadley gave me a bit of background to the importance to levy payers and the purpose of this sort of visit.
Hi, I'm Phil Hadley, International Director with AHDB, and we're here today supporting a visit by influential United States agricultural leaders to farms in the Cotswold region to show them what we do here in the UK and our agricultural production. This group is really interested in the comparisons and the contrast between production in the US and the UK, and this is great reputation sharing and building between the UK and the US as we talk about wider global trade.
Phil, why is it important though that groups of, in this case, people from the United States come and have a look around the farms?
Well, we're really proud of what we do here in the UK in terms of our production, our livestock management, our welfare, our environmental standards and our climate control. And climate policies. We want to share that with US and other countries that we have interest in doing trade with, but we also want to understand what they're doing so that we can learn lessons and share our lessons so that we're all driving in the same direction for the improvement and the betterment of meat production globally.
Now, for levy payers listening to this, they're going to wonder, really, well, what's in it for them? Is this about trying to bring trade into the UK, or are you trying to drive trade to the United States?
There's an element of both, but from our perspective, it's about opening new markets, understanding new markets, and being able to sell and market our product overseas. So we've recently gained access for beef to the US, and in 2021 that was worth more than 10 million to the UK meat supply chain. We've are hoping to achieve access for sheep meat in the latter half of this year, 2022, and we estimate that's worth around 37 million sterling over the next 5 years. So from our perspective, we're seeking opportunities for the products overseas to try and add value to the UK supply chain. But our US delegates are also looking at the UK and other parts of the world in terms of broader trade and how they could sell and market their products here.
So the perhaps you'd tell us a little bit about the farms that the visitors have been to see.
Yeah, well, the first farm, again, in the Cotswolds was a really beautiful beef farm. Lovely cattle, very healthy, free-ranging cattle. That farm there is very focused on the environmental aspects, using mixed herb lays for environmental benefit, but focused on nutrition of their animals. They're using an environmental land management scheme. They'd set some land aside for crops to encourage birds and invertebrates. So really showing the environmental aspects of what we're trying to do in harmony with meat production, livestock production on the cattle farm. And a not dissimilar story on the sheep farm actually, how sheep farming, very traditional sheep farm, fits in and can improve the environmental conditions locally for birds and wildlife in the micro region.
Phil Hadley, thanks for joining us.
Beef farmer David Barton and his family welcomed the group to their farm, and over a cup of coffee in the farmhouse, David shared some of the history before we took a trip to see the animals and their grazing.
We came here as a family in 1913. The farm was owned then by Corpusley College, and my father managed to purchase it in 1957 or 8, I think. So very lucky about that. The house itself, you came into the new bit, that's 1662. That's on the doors, we know that. But this would be This is the main part of the house, which would be probably sort of 1750s. And I'm guessing this is sort of the grand bit of the house. And this bit just in here, which we'll go through as we go out and we have a look around the farm. That's sort of the original house in the village. That's probably about 1450. So that's a little bit of history about us. Beef sector producers. Our system of rearing beef is very traditional, but it's really sustainable. So we have supper cows grazing. They come in just for about 6 weeks. And you come just at a time when they're just about to go out. So as they calve, they literally go out with their calves. It's just to make life easier for me, really. But we out-winter them on stubble turnips. In November, when we wean the calves, through to January, and then they just come in for sort of a six-week period and then back out again. So based on grass and fodder here, producing beef. We start calving the 1st of March. Traditionally, that's our date. I'd say we've got a lot of cows ready. They're just queuing up at the moment, but we've only had 5 calves, one this morning, which I'll have a look at that later. So key thing for me in production is the cow and the calf. Big thing is colostrum. We get that colostrum into the calf. That means I don't need to use antibiotics, basically, because that calf has given all her immunity to my calf. And it's really important that they get that really quickly. So within a couple of hours, I like the cow and calf to have mothered up and suckled, and then that's it. I don't have any issues then. They just deal with it. They just carry on their own. So that's a really key thing. That colostrum is absolutely key. They look after the cow, they're grazing through the summer season, producing milk, and the calf is grazing as well when it gets to a point when it can ruminate. So it's all grass-based through that system. And we wean them about 7 months old. We're aiming to get our calves to be about 50% of the cow weight at weaning, but I'm nearly there, but not quite. I've got a little way to go. That's one of my aims, but it's quite a challenge. So we're actually making our cows a little bit smaller, a bit more efficient. So the calf at 7 months really has just had its mother, to nothing else. We don't have any other input, we don't feed, we don't know, just grass. When they come in and they're weaned, we've made a big effort to, and over the last few years, to forage. So everything is forage based, grass. So really good grass silage, and if we've got really, really good grass silage, you don't really need anything else, but we do grow some cereals on the farm, so we grow malting and milling wheat. The malting barley, anything that doesn't make malting grade for beer, is feed barley. So we do feed a little bit of barley, but it's relatively small, just to balance up our ration. Currently the calves are having about a kilo and a half of barley a day through that that first winter when they've been weaned off their mothers.
That was beef farmer David Barton. Now, although generally the weather was great, it was a little blowy, so apologies for the sound quality when I grabbed some time with members of the delegation. Kate Greenberg was first to the microphone.
My name's Kate Greenberg, and I'm the Commissioner of Agriculture from Colorado.
Oh, well, welcome to England.
Thank you.
So you've been here a few days, and today you've had the opportunity to look around a couple of farms. What's your first impression?
Well, my first impression, and this is something that's true in the States and it's very true here, is just the ingenuity of producers here in the UK, adaptability to the landscape over many generations and centuries, and I think we're seeing that now, adapting to the needs of the future and continuing to grow and raise food.
Now, we're on a sheep farm just now, and a little bit earlier on we were on a beef farm. Are there any particular differences that you see in the systems in this country in comparison to what you're used to at home?
Well, I'm from a very dry place in Colorado, for starters. But, you know, so the differences in climate and soil and growing practice, there are certainly those differences in landscape. But a lot of similarities in terms of where I see adaptability and sort of ingenuity coming to light in both countries. We've talked a lot about the potential for agriculture to be a solution to climate change, and we're seeing that on both of these operations. That's something we're working, is what priority of ours in Colorado, is to make sure that farmers and ranchers are at the forefront of solutions, and we see the opportunities in ag. So thinking about soil, about rotating animals on ground, thinking about the potential for grass to be a carbon sink as it grows and is grazed, and then how you tell that story and connect the consumer and make sure we have those relationships strong has been a guiding theme, one of the many today.
And how important do you think undertaking these sort of trips are?
The last 3 days here have just been remarkable. I didn't know what to expect. It's my first time abroad in this role, and the hospitality here in the UK has just been remarkable. The interest in sharing ideas and new developments across the pond is heartening. And I think the partnerships we've seen from the producers to the embassy to the folks we met at government who are all thinking about the same issues and having to tackle the same issues and how we do that together as partners has been very exciting for us to see.
Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Sandy Stewart was my next American guest.
I'm Sandy Stewart. I serve as Assistant Commissioner of Agriculture for the state of North Carolina. For the North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
And how many days have you been here, Sandy?
We have been here since in England since Saturday, or was it Sunday morning? I'm sorry, they run together.
Okay, well, so you've been on a beef farm this morning. This afternoon we're here on a sheep farm. What have you seen that's impressed you most?
You know, the impressive thing that we've seen with the beef cattle farm, particularly this morning, was the level of management and how they really fit their management to the land and the land here in the Cotswolds with the uplands and in the lowlands down in the valleys, or I guess you would call it that. But the way those cattle are rotationally grazed, and the different species, the multi-species, incorporating legumes and those kind of things, it really makes for an efficient operation. But it takes a very high level of management and planning. And I've noticed that farmers all over the world are really tremendous managers of their resources, and that was an impression that I took away this morning.
So clearly, you've benefited from being here. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you could share with our listeners what those sort of benefits are. What do you take home, and what will be done differently? What will happen as a result of the visit?
Well, I think one thing, when you go and you visit with farmers around the world, you find out how much you have in common. And you have in common that dealing with the resources you have, high levels of management, and what we all want to do is produce an affordable, efficient, and safe food supply that has the minimal environmental impact possible. And so we can learn a lot of things from each other. The environmental schemes here that encourage wildlife and diversity across the landscape, it's something in the United States we've been doing as well, but we learn new techniques every time we visit with people that in particular like the hedgerows. That's one that comes to mind. When I was growing up in North Carolina, there were a lot of quail along fence rows and hedgerows and things, and as our agricultural landscape has sort of transitioned over time, I think we've lost a lot of that quail habitat. And so, you know, they're very specific things like that, but also just in general, managing that resource to produce an abundant food supply and with the minimal impact on the environment is what we're after.
Sandy, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
A farmer from the USA, he shared some of his thoughts.
I'm Richard Ball. I'm a farmer from upstate New York, a small town called Schoharie, and I'm also the Commissioner of Agriculture for New York State.
Richard, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for sparing the time to talk to us.
Oh, great to be here.
Just tell us a little bit about what you've seen today and who you've met in the last few days.
Well, today we've been focusing a little bit more on livestock production here in the UK, but we got to see some produce operations, we got to see some gin operations, and we've got to see the diversity that you have in the UK in agriculture, and it's just been, every day has exceeded our expectations, honestly. We've had a marvelous time.
And do you believe that there is real value in going and having a look at these different systems in different countries?
Oh, absolutely. And there's more reason to do this now probably than ever. You know, we're at a point in the history of agriculture where we're doing as good a job as I think we've ever done in history of agriculture. But we've just gone through a strange couple of years. And I think we've seen a light shone very brightly on the food system and the food supply system. And I know in New York State and in the USA, and I'm sure here in the UK, that that light showed some challenges with the food system. When it first hit us, both ends of the food chain were hurt the most. Consumers trying to find access to the food they needed and wanted, and farmers who lost half their market because they had traditionally gone into the food service world, schools, institutions, etc. And so, you know, we heard stories of farmers dumping milk and people not being able to buy milk. Well, we've got to have learned some things from that experience. And I think the one thing we need to, you know, kind of bear down on a little bit is that we need, in our own countries, in our own communities, a responsive and resilient food system that's there. We don't want to depend on another part of the world, certainly today. We're seeing those shortages showing up with world events that are happening now. We have a pandemic. We have some sort of a disaster. We need to have a food system close by. So we've seen a real interest in local food growing over the years, which is fantastic. But I'm hoping that the silver lining over the last couple of years is that consumers realize they need agriculture, and it better be close by, and it better be resilient and responsive.
In Britain, of course, one of the things that farmers have had some difficulties tackling has been labour shortage. Is that also something that you've experienced in the States?
Yeah, and it's all across the spectrum, and it's not just agriculture. But certainly in agriculture, as I get around my state, we don't have enough workers on our farms. We've been dealing with that for some time now. But we don't have enough workers now in our food manufacturing facilities and our craft beverage opportunities. We don't have enough workers in our dairy processing plants. It's no longer young men pushing, you know, pallets and cartons of milk and loading trucks and picking up, you know, cartons. Now it's, you know, stand in place at a laptop and clean in place programs and moving the milk off the truck and moving it into the silo and then onto the pasteurizer. And we don't have the skills in the workforce that we need today. And so I see the labor challenge as being one of a really workforce training problem also, not just numbers of people, but people with the skills that today's agriculture requires.
We appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
And now let's talk to Richard Gale.
Hello. I'm Richard Gale from Binley Farm near Tetbury.
Hi, Richard. Thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. Have you hosted a visit like this before?
We have. We had an American group come out a few years ago and thoroughly enjoyed meeting a diverse bunch of people. So.
And do you think this sort of visit and exports is really important work for AHDB, and do you see a benefit?
I think, yes, it's very, very important for British agriculture to put our goods out there, isn't it? And I think the little bit we can do like this will make a, you know, could make a difference in the long run.
And were there any of the conversations that you just had that that you could share, you know, with fellow levy payers? So, you know, people like yourself that are listening to this, they may just wonder, is it really worth all the investment and going to all the trouble to talk to our friends in America?
We hope so, don't we? I mean, we've got a lot of lamb to sell around the world, so we need to find the premium markets for it. I think that, you know, it's interesting meeting people like this because they certainly seem very taken by the differences in our agriculture to what they used to back in the States. And I think it points out to them that they tend to remember things when it's told by another farmer, so to speak. So, yeah, no, I'm very much in favour.
Do you work very closely with AHDB anyway, Richard? Or
we find AHDB very useful with technical information and have done over the years.
So at the moment, AHDB is trying to encourage farmers to have their say about the future of the organisation, the so-called Shape the Future. Is that something that you're keen on?
I think it's very important to analyse what we're doing going forward and see where we've got to go. As a small farmer, I find the input very useful, because it gives me access to information that I wouldn't be able to afford otherwise. And so I'm in favour of, you know, carrying on with it personally.
Richard, thank you very much for hosting the visit and joining us on the podcast.
Spring 2022 is your opportunity to vote, to have your say about the future direction of AHDB. For more information, you can email shapethefuture@ahdb.org.uk or visit the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk.